Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. Amen. Well, a couple weeks ago, I started going to spin classes again. I think I talked about this a couple years ago. I took a couple years off. I'm just kidding. I did take some time off, you know, just to let my body recover and things like that. But I started going again, and it's been great. I really do enjoy it a lot. It's very music-based, and I love music, and so it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, one of the things that has been interesting, and as I'm kind of getting reacclimated to this process of spin, if you don't know, it's a stationary bike that you die on, essentially, over a period of 40 minutes. They play music. There's a classroom full of people. This one that I go to, there's 50 bikes. They're not all full necessarily all the time, but they play these songs, and so you're pedaling to the beat of these songs, and then also as you're pedaling, they decide it'd be really fun, as if it's not hard enough, let's add in, like, crunches and these other movements and these other things, and so I'm just, like, trying to figure this out, trying to get back into this piece, and then they're playing the song, and we're pedaling, and we're doing the crunches, and we're doing the movements, and Dua Lipa's blasting through the speakers, and I'm barely making it, and then the song ends, and then the instructor's like, "How's everybody doing?" And everybody in the room is just like, "Yeah," and I'm just gasping for air in the entire process. It is like this really bizarre aspect, this really bizarre experience, because there is this massive mixture of people that seem to be having a total blast and not dying, and some of us who are just trying to make it out alive. And so what happens is they're going through these songs. There's probably about 10 or 11 songs that they do in each class, and they're going through, and the instructor is saying these really motivating and encouraging things like, "You can do it. Keep pushing. Push through the pain. Your mind wants to stop, but your body can keep going." Like, all of these things. And I try to believe them, you guys. I try so hard to believe that it's true. But I have to admit, at least on some level, it does help me to keep pushing through. But also, I recognize that not everybody in there is the same. Not everybody actually can do it the entire time, right? There's, like, at least one person that's unable to do the exercise. It's unable to keep the pace. That's unable to do all the hand motions. And that person's me. And I'm okay with that. No, but there is this aspect of this experience where I love the encouragement and I love the challenge. And honestly, I probably would quit way sooner if they weren't doing it. But on some level, I have to figure out how do I give myself a break? How do I allow myself an opportunity to rest, to relax, to take a breath? When we think about this idea of resilience, which is a series we've been on, Rules of Resilience, a lot of us envision resilience as this idea, kind of the same thing, where there's, like, this coach that's just telling us, "Go, you can do it, keep pedaling, that's not the right beat or the tempo or whatever it is," and they're just, like, cheering us on, and we kind of think of this idea of resilience as, like, I'm just going to force myself to make it. I'm just going to will myself to accomplish this dream or this goal. I'm just going to will myself to make it through this difficult situation, this trauma, this medical diagnosis, whatever it is. And we think of resilience as, no matter the cost, no matter how much it hurts, no matter how tired I am, no matter how complex it is, I'm just going to push through to the other side. I think a lot of us think that we can just hold on to this idea, that we can ignore the pain, that we can ignore some of the warning signs. We think of resilience as pushing through, but as it turns out, oftentimes believing that we can just push through when we actually can't is going to be counterproductive. We have to have some sort of realistic understanding of how much is too much. How far can I go? How hard can I push? But the challenge is figuring out when to keep pushing and when to pull back. Because the reality is that those who go the distance aren't always those who go nonstop. A lot of them are aware of how to take a break, how to rest, how to sit down on the bike every once in a while, how to take some deep breaths, how to take some time. We all have these things. And again, we've been talking about these kind of two big buckets, the bucket of things I want to do, like passions, desires, goals, and they're big, big challenges. Maybe it's a career opportunity or a goal in your finances, or I want to go and complete my master's degree, or whatever it is, these big, good things that we have to have resilience to keep fighting for. And then there's these other things that are these challenging, problematic, hurtful, surprising, nobody asked for this, it was just kind of delivered to our doorstep types of things. And I don't want it to defeat me. I want to be able to make it through these challenges as well. We've been talking about these ideas and what does it look like to be resilient. And we're going to wrap it up today. And it's been a few weeks. I missed you guys last week, but I heard Sam did great. And so I love that you guys got to hear from him. But we've been talking about the story of Gideon. It's been about a month. We've been looking at the story. And so I figured it's probably time for us to do one of our favorite things that all of our favorite TV shows do previously on the story of Gideon. Let's do a little refresher in case you've forgotten or in case you weren't able to make it to some of these weeks. God called this man named Gideon, who was self-identified as the weakest man in his family, and his family was the weakest family in his tribe, and his tribe was the weakest tribe in all of Israel. And God came to this man and he said, "Greetings, mighty hero." This man that was hiding at the time. And he gave him this huge challenge to overcome and defeat the enemies, the Midianites, who had been oppressing their nation for years. They were destroying them, taking all of their food and crops and all these different things. So he trusts God and he starts to move step by step. And his strength and his faith grew. And that first rule of resilience was that oftentimes, to be resilient, we just have to continue taking small, consistent steps. The story goes on, and God puts all of these people around him to help him, specifically these 300 soldiers, and helps him sort through who's going to be able to help him stand strong and accomplish this task. And the second rule of resilience was that we need to have real, trustworthy relationships, people that are able to continue moving us towards this thing that either we have dreamt of doing or this thing that we are set out to accomplish or that God's called us to do, trustworthy support. And last week, Sam talked about the voices of fear and doubt and the different voices that we have internally and the way that we need to have some intentional, healthy self-talk. And that's really the third rule of resilience is how do we speak to ourselves? What are we saying to ourselves? What are the tapes that are on loop in our own mind? And that's that third rule of resilience. And so we're going to jump in and we're going to finish this story today, believe it or not. We're going to read a good amount of this story. Judges chapter 7, if you guys have your Bibles, a lot of these scriptures will be on the screen as well. It says, and this is Gideon talking, he says, "Watch me," he told them, "follow my lead, and when I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do." So again, this is Gideon, 300 soldiers facing 100 plus thousand of these enemies. He says, "When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon." Which feels like maybe he just like slipped that last part in just a little bit. Like, I just need some encouragement, guys, okay? Like, just put me in there as well. So 300, I mean, this is an absolutely overwhelming scene. There is no way, there's no human way that 300 people can win this battle. But these are the people that Gideon has brought around him. These are the people that God has identified to help him accomplish this massive goal, this massive undertaking. Story goes on in verse 22. It says, "When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp, the enemies, to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to, what does it say? Oh, real nice, everybody. We can do this. Beth Shitta. It's okay. I'm just going to take the heat for it, okay? The army fled and then towards Zerera as far as the border of Abel and Meholah near Tabith. Now, can I tell you guys a secret? If you say it with confidence, nobody will question whether you're pronouncing the names right, okay? So just like you got to give it 100% when you read these names. So the Israelites don't kill the enemies. The 300 Israelites, they don't kill them. The enemies end up attacking each other. They end up killing each other, and then they take off running. They go and they hide, and the Israelites start to chase after them. The story goes on here in verse 23. It says, Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out, and they pursued the Midianites. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them as far as Beth Bara. So Gideon calls for backup. He calls for more help, more aid, more soldiers to come and help them so they can defeat the Midianites. And they do end up getting two of the Midianite leaders, but there's still leaders left and soldiers left. And so the story continues in chapter 8, verse 4. It says, Gideon and his 300 men, exhausted, yet keeping up the pursuit, came to the Jordan and crossed it. And he said to the men of Succoth, give my troops some bread. They are worn out, and I am still pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. In other words, we've exhausted ourselves. There's a lot more to do, but we can't do it effectively because we have been running and planning and battling and fighting and screaming and charging and trying to overcome the enemy. And my men are, they're empty. They have nothing left. We still have this goal that we're trying to achieve. We still have this these leaders that we're trying to capture, that we're trying to kill. But my men need to eat. Gideon seems to know this idea that the ability to push through comes from knowing how and when to pull back. There is this goal that he has, and there is this aspect in his mind of recognizing, yes, I want to accomplish this. I need to accomplish this. It's not done yet. I still have more to go. And yet, I have to take a moment. My men need to rest. They need to care for themselves so they can continue to pursue this goal, so they can continue to have resilience. There's this aspect of rest that somehow is baked into the pursuit of resilience. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense to us. When we're facing a difficult thing, a massive mountain, an obstacle, a challenge, a goal, whatever it might be, it feels like we should just continue. If we're going to be resilient, it's just go, 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 like in that class. Just keep pushing through. Your mind wants you to stop, but your body can keep going. Like all of these things that we've heard before, it feels like we should just keep pushing and keep pushing. But there is this crucial reality of understanding the importance of taking some time, of taking some rest, of caring for ourselves, of allowing our body, our mind, our spirit to rest. There's a culture that tells us to put through the pain, push through the pain, but that's not always the best strategy. Pain is a message that needs to be interpreted. Sometimes we need to listen and stop. Other times we need to acknowledge it and keep going. But there's this important aspect of taking the time to listen and ensure, am I still going at the right pace, the right direction? We know this scientifically, but there is this idea of rest that God's been calling us to throughout all of Scripture. In Hebrews, actually, chapter 4, it says this. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. This reality is, this verse is summarizing so many reminders and commands and promises that God has given us. And I don't know that I need to ask for like a show of hands of how many of us have felt like there's been a moment in your life where it's just like, I've been running for so long and I just don't know if I can keep doing it. I just don't know how much farther I can go. I've been working at this for so long and I'm just not sure if it's worth it. At some point, I feel like I'm just going to give up. There is this aspect of rest that is so crucial to our ability to keep going. But it goes against our culture. It goes against the way that we naturally assume things would work. In our world, everyone just says, no, keep going. Don't take a break until you've earned it. Don't rest until you've achieved all of these goals, these dreams, these desires. You've overcome these challenges. You can't rest until you've reached the finish line. But all throughout the scripture, we see this reminder in Genesis, after God creates everything, he rests. And then in Exodus, the Israelites are commanded to regularly rest. And here in the New Testament, the author is telling us we still need regular rest. And if we don't take it, on some level, we will crash and burn. We will break down and burn out. And Gideon knows this. If you don't take a break, you will eventually end up breaking. We have got to start to get this into our minds and into our systems. And I want us to, I'll talk about this more in a minute, but let me just put a pin in this. This is not about a 2-week tropical vacation, although it's also about that. But that's not the baseline that I'm talking about when it comes to this idea of rest. When it comes to this idea of Sabbath, of ceasing, of taking some time, of being aware of physically, mentally, spiritually, where are you at? Where are those tanks at? It's so crucial for us to understand that if we don't take healthy breaks, then ultimately our health will break. If we don't take time, it will eventually be taken from us. This rule about how this works applies to everyone. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus is in the middle of his ministry. He's teaching and healing and doing miracles, and the disciples are with him. And I mean, it's all of this incredible stuff. And in verse 31 of chapter 6, it says, "Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, 'Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest.'" And I think it's a fascinating, just like, couple of words. There are so many people. There's so much to do. There's so many people that want to hear my teachings. There's so many people that need to be healed. There's so many people that need to be cared for. We need to take a break. It's not because he had finished the work. It's not because the numbers had dwindled down and it was time for a work. It was, we need to take a break so we can continue the important work that we are doing. So I can continue the important ministry that I'm doing. The break is a crucial aspect of being able to complete it. It's not a break because it's completed. And if Jesus and the disciples needed that, we also probably need that. We also need to understand the importance of what that is. It wasn't because there wasn't anything to do. It's because there was still so much to do. And Gideon asks these people for the resources so that his soldiers could rest. And of course, they're going to give them to him, right? In verse 6, it says, "The officials of Succoth said, 'Do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession?' Which the answer was no. Then why should we give bread to your troops? Finish the job. Push through. You can do it. It's just your brain telling you to quit, but your body can keep going. We're halfway through class, Chris. You can make it." This is the reality that so many of us believe this concept of, no, I can't take a break because I've still got so much to do. There's still so many things to accomplish. I can't care for myself because there's still so many other things I need to care for first. And after I've cared for all of those, then I can care for myself. We fall into this trap. Our culture, especially our work culture, as things have changed from people strictly being in the office from 9 to 5, I know that there's some people that still do that, but people that are working from home, I mean, what does the actual cutoff time of work look like? And it's not like people that work a 9 to 5 are exempt from that. I know a lot of people that had that schedule and still worked 9 to 10, 8 to 7. I mean, we're always working more and pursuing more, constantly on, constantly connected. We need to exercise the discernment to know when to rest and have the common sense to actually do it. And only you, as an individual, and maybe those people that are closest to you, know what that looks like for you. It's not a blanket statement. Some people are wired differently. They have different capacities and capabilities. Some people are able to do physical work, and they could do it for hours and hours and hours every single day. And other people are incredible minds, and they're able to think and process and organize and strategize. And some of us are neither, and we're just kind of trying to figure it out. But you are a unique person, and you have to figure out, how do I care for me in this process so that I can be resilient? This is what Gideon is lobbying for, these soldiers that have been following orders, doing what they're told, fighting hard. They need to catch their breath, to reset and refuel. The story goes on, chapter 8, verse 7. And Gideon replied, "Just for that, when the Lord has given Zebah and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars." Yikes. The biblical definition of hangry, I think, is what this ultimately is. I mean, it's very out of context for everything else that Gideon had done and said, the way he had acted and led. I mean, there is just like this rage that comes up. This rage because of how much he cares for his men and understands that they need to be cared for. Maybe this rage because of how much he knows he needs to accomplish this mission, and it can't be accomplished without some sort of rest. Got to pull some cues from what Gideon was doing here. He leaves that village because they're not going to help him. He goes to find another one that will help him. So from there, he went to Peniel and made the same request of them, but they answered as the men of Succoth had. So he said to the men of Peniel, "When I return in triumph, I'm going to tear down this tower." Again, it's just like, what is happening? This level of frustration and anger. Everywhere he turns, he can't find the help that he needs, and he's plunging into hopelessness because there's this aspect of control that he's trying to grasp for. I know that I've been in those situations where I've tried to set boundaries, I've tried to find healthy pace, but it just feels like the external circumstances don't allow it. It's one thing after another. It's one thing after another. There's never a time. There's never a chance. I just can't catch my breath. We've all felt those types of things. And it can lead us to a place where we just start to get angry, bitter, frustrated. We want to give up. We lash out to people that we don't need to lash out against. And I would imagine that Gideon is seeing the hopelessness in the eyes of his men, and he understands that their need for rest in order to be resilient. Gideon realizes he doesn't have control over if his troops have to move forward. Clearly, they're going to have to. No one is willing to help them, but he does have control over how they move forward. And there's a turn in the story here. And I think it's really important because some of us, we don't actually have full control over our work schedule, right? Some of us are like, "Yeah, Chris, that's great. Unfortunately, my boss isn't in church today. He doesn't know that I need rest. Unfortunately, my kids aren't in this service. I hope Pastor Alex is going to tell them to give me a rest, to give me a break." There's this reality where not all of us have control over all these things. We don't have the luxury of just saying, "You know what? I'm going to take a long lunch today, and I'm going to take a mental health day tomorrow, and I'm going to come back at it on Monday, and it's going to be a great thing." We don't all have that that ability, and neither did Gideon. And so he makes this adjustment of saying, okay, and we'll get to what he does in just a second. But he makes a twist, an adjustment. He takes what he does have control over, and he says, I need to figure out how to make this work for me in my situation. In my spin classes, I know you guys are all fascinated by, every once in a while, they'll get to a place where I think that they can see the big guy in the back row, like leaning over slowly. And they say, if you need to sit down and just ride without standing up and doing the motions, that's okay. And I just look around like, who could they be talking to? But I do. Happily, I take that break and I keep pedaling, which I think is the point of riding a bicycle. It's not push-ups or crunches, but I keep the pedaling. But I take a break and I'm completing this thing. I'm taking control of this one aspect of it. It's like, okay, let me ease up in this one area so that I can continue moving forward overall. And it's a silly example, but I wonder what that looks like for us. I wonder what that looks like for you. And for I to take control of just a few things. How do you take control of some of the things that are in your sphere of influence? Because there's a lot that I recognize are not. All right, the story, the twist happens. Chapter 8, verse 11. Gideon leaves these cities that won't help him. And it says, he went up by the route of the nomads east of Noba and Jogbeha. Confidence, and attacked the unsuspecting army. He takes a different route. He takes a different approach. He says, you know what? We can't stop. No one's going to feed us. We have to do this. Let me readjust what is in my sphere of influence and what is in my sphere of control. Zeba and Zalmunna, the two kings of Midian, fled, but he pursued them and captured them, routing or defeating their entire army. Gideon fights the battle. He's forced to fight, but he does it on his own terms. He takes control of the things that he can take control of by being creative about what he had some influence over. Viktor Frankl, psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, wrote about his time in Auschwitz. And he said that there was another prisoner that told him early on that to increase his chance of survival, he needed to do two things. And it's, I mean, the complexity, the bigness, the horror. There's two things you need to do to increase your chance of survival. He said you need to shave and stand up straight. Because those were two things that they all had control over in their own life. There was nothing else. Take control over the things that you can control. And it will give you a sense of strength, of capability, of moving forward, of withstanding in this situation, absolute horrors. And in our situations, what does it look like for us to take our eyes off of what we can't control, like Gideon, who starts lashing out at these people who won't give him what he needs, who won't help the way that he wants? There's this frustration and anger. And what does it look like for us to say, you know what, rather than being absolutely furious and giving up over what I can't control anyways, what can I control? What are the things that I can actually do? How can I make adjustments? And this is what Gideon does, which ultimately leads to the success of this battle. What are the things you actually can control? Because oftentimes we sacrifice and we ignore those things in constant pursuit of something that we actually can't control. We actually, as much as I want this marriage to make it, and it feels like it's not going to, I can't actually make this marriage heal. As much as I want to see this career opportunity move forward, I can't actually give myself the job. As much as I want to make sure that my kids grow up to be functioning adults and a loving neighbor and a part of society, there's only so much that I can do here. And so rather than being aware of the things that we can control, we pour all of our time and mental energy and effort into these things that we can't control. And oftentimes it just ends up leaving us empty and broken and exhausted. We often equate resilience with persistence, and sometimes it is, but there's times when it is the opposite. So my challenge for us this week is to slate something that you find restful and refueling into each day, week, and month. And before you laugh at me, I want to talk about what this could look like, because it's not only a tropical beach. There's a lot of different aspects. There's a lot of moments in your lives and in my life, because this is so hard for me as well, that we do have control over. So what does it look like practically for us to do this each day, week, and month? Obviously, some things are harder, more challenging. Some things are easier. Some things are expensive. Some things are free. So here's a tool that there's a pastor, an author named Steve Cuss, who talked about this, and it's been super helpful for me. He calls it the life-giving list. And I want to talk through this a little bit. And he has, if you want it, you can let me know and I'll email it to you. But it's an Excel sheet. And basically, there's three categories: people, places, and activities. And so he talks about taking some time, and he actually says to do it in like a really short, condensed amount of time, just almost like a brain dump. So write down as many things in like 10 minutes as you can. But he says that these three categories, and all of these things are things that give us life, or things that fill us, things that ultimately help us to rest, to care for ourselves, things that refuel us. And so in the first category of people, he breaks it down, because he knows that there's some people that are local and there's some people that are far away. And so what are some people that are close by? People that fill you, that re-energize you, that encourage you, that support you, people that you can show up and have lunch with, or go to pints with a pastor with, or whatever the thing is. Who are those close people? Maybe there's other people in your life that you're really, really close with, but they're a little bit more distant. And you can't call them every Wednesday to hang out, but maybe once a year, it makes sense for you to go meet up with that person. Maybe it's family that lives distant, and there's just this life that you get from spending time with your family. Maybe it's a friend from college or whatever it might be, but who are the people both close and far, and what does it look like for you to be aware of how to rely on them? So you're just making a list at this point, so that when you recognize, I need some time, I need a rest, I need to be refilled, refueled, I'm gonna reach out to these people. The second one is places. The place for me that is the most restful and recharging is very easy. It's Costa Rica. I don't get to go to Costa Rica very often. I've only been twice, and I don't know when the next time I'm gonna go is, but that's on my list. That's on my list. It takes some more time. It takes a little bit more money. But I know that that is a place for me that I absolutely love. There's also a park 3 blocks from our house that overlooks the Newport Peninsula. And all of my problems seem to melt away when I go to that park. I'd rather go to Costa Rica, but most weeks I know I can go to the park. So what are the places, close and distant, that take different amounts of time and cost? What are the activities that take the different amounts of time and cost? One of the things for me that has been an odd life-giving thing is in the summer, around 8 p.m., when nobody is at the beach anymore, I love riding my bike down to the boardwalk and just riding all the way down and all the way back, and it's quiet and still, and it was my favorite thing to do last summer. I did it every single night that I could. It's free. It does not take that much time. Then there's other activities that do take time and money. So the goal here for us is to say, hey, I want to be intentional. I want to brain dump a bunch of things, people, activities, places, because I need to be able to take control of what I can take control over. And so I know some people I've worked with in the past where it's like, you know what? Every day at 3 p.m., I go to that coffee shop and I get a coffee, because I need that to make it to 5 p.m. I can try and push through, but nobody's going to like that version of me, including me. So I'm going to take the 20 minutes and I'm going to go get that coffee. I mean, what does it look like to take control of some of the things that you can control? In Matthew 11, I'll close with this. Jesus was teaching. Verse 28, he says, very familiar, well-known verse. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. There's another translation on the screen. It says, put my yoke upon your shoulders. It might appear heavy at first, which if we're honest, that's one of the things that we're all like a little bit trigger shy when it comes to Christianity of, wait, I have to do what? I'm not allowed to do what? There's this sense of weight of taking it on. It might appear heavy at first, but it's perfectly fitted to your curves. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. When you are yoked to me, your souls, your weary souls, will find rest. There's this way of following Jesus where there is a spiritual rest because we no longer have to earn any sort of salvation. But as we follow Jesus, as we follow his teachings and the teachings of the scripture, we learn that there are physical lessons. There are financial lessons. There are relational lessons. There are parenting lessons. There are so many things that we can learn and we can begin to apply to our lives, to our relationships, to the obstacles and challenges and goals. So what does it look like to come to Jesus, not only for the spiritual rest, but also to learn the ways of how we can be resilient? Taking small, consistent steps, putting the right relationships around us, having healthy self-talk, and learning how to rest and control the things that we can as we pursue these goals, dreams, and overcoming these challenges. Let's pray together. Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.